freestyle rapping, losing all our people in the clubhouse because there's a commerce club going on.
Welcome back to another edition of the Three Good Things podcast, where you guessed it, I talk about three good things. I'm Shardul, and let's just jump into it. Today, we have a guest for our podcast, the fantastic Nick Sharma. Welcome to the pod, Nick.
Thanks for having me, man.
So, Nick
is... I didn't know I was that fantastic, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a sub-adjective I got to put in front of the guest. So, Nick is the CEO of Sharma Brands, a strategic initiatives firm working with a wide range of brands to help grow and scale revenue across digital platforms. Nick is one of Adweek's Young and Influential, Forbes 30 Under 30, and an investor and advisor to some of the fastest growing brands in commerce. Along with being an active, very active Clubhouse user, he's actually out of a panel he's supposed to be on right now to record this podcast. So thank you, Nick, for taking the time out.
It's okay. Just send my condolences to Ben Parr for me.
Will do. His work with hypergrowth brands like Hint Water, Pill Club, and Judy have resulted in new strategies, milestones, and millions of dollars in additional revenue for the companies. He's a keen eye for sociological advancements and culture, and a data-driven mind for what works and what doesn't in a rapidly changing environment. We live in a world where data is abundant. By the way, Nick wrote this, so if you think this is way too long, please let him know. But we live in a world where data is abundant, but what to do with that data is where Nick thrives. The balance between research, content, distribution, and the unknowns and terrible choices in which basketball team to support is his juggling act. Nick lives in New York City, where he spends much of his spare time solving the Rubik's Cube of cost-effectively driving sales for his brand partners, and occasionally, only occasionally, probably like once a month, he stops by the local SoulCycle or Rumble to let off a little steam. Damn, Nick, that was a mouthful.
Really pissing me off, you know?
That was a mouthful, man. Jesus.
That was from a copywriter that's working with me on a special project. But
ooh, okay.
You asked for a bio last minute. That was the closest thing I had access to. The other problem is if you search Nick Sharma bio,
yeah,
there's a famous chef also named Nick Sharma. And so it starts out saying, like, an Indian food writer breaks free from tradition.
I mean,
that's definitely not me.
That would have been funny if you were also a chef on the side, along with all the rest of this.
Are you really? With my, I have caraway pans, I have my Brightland olive oil, I have my Amsam sauces. I can usually whip up something pretty fancy there.
What is your go-to meal to whip up?
I feel like I'm plugging all my portfolio companies, but I really invest in things that, like, I use on a daily basis. But I just started using this new thing called Levels, which is a continuous glucose monitor.
Ooh, okay.
And as a byproduct of that, I realized a lot of the things that I was eating were actually not good for me, even though I thought they were. And so I've pretty much dialed in like a perfect meal or a perfect day's meal for my body. So usually I'll have like sweet green for lunch. And then for dinner, depending on what kind of mood I'm in, I'll usually make something, whether it's like grilled chicken and, you know, veggies, or a lot of times I'll make like a homemade pizza from scratch, which has been a lot of fun. But yeah, I mean, tonight I'll probably end up making another pizza.
That's dope. Do you typically cook more in a given week or eat takeout?
Well, I was doing a lot of takeout at the beginning of quarantine, and now when I go in the mirror, I look like it. And so I've been doing a lot more cooking. I've been doing a lot more cooking as a result. And thankfully that's starting to reverse the look.
Yeah, totally. I was in a similar boat where I was doing a lot of takeout delivery. I got like DoorDash, Uber Eats, all the delivery things. And then very quickly realized that my beer belly gut was coming back. And I was like, yeesh. So started working out twice a day. Going on runs, exploring San Francisco.
There you go.
Now I'm pretty close to a six pack, but I do have a six pack next to me as well.
Nice.
Just for now. I don't know if it helps, but it does taste great. But yeah, jumping right into it. How did we meet, man? Any funny stories?
We met exactly a week ago on Clubhouse.
Yeah, I guess so.
In a room, I'm trying to think who else was there. Michael Wider. Jonathan Smalley, a few other people were there. I think it was actually last Thursday, not Tuesday.
All the day. I don't really know what day it is anymore when I hop on Clubhouse.
There's no such thing as the real day anymore.
Yeah, like I just say no happy day. I think I forgot if we were talking about basketball in that room or if we were.
Yes, that's exactly what we were doing. We were talking about what team I'm supposed to become a bandwagoner for.
That's right.
Because I have no loyalty, and neither have I been actually properly keeping up with basketball this season.
So why don't you have any team loyalty? That's pretty important for just being a person.
Well, now Troy in the room is texting me that if I don't tell him, if I don't say that I'm a Knicks supporter, I'm going to end up with a very bad situation. So I'm going to say I'm a Knicks supporter. I would also say that I have chosen to be a Knicks supporter since I moved here. To follow that bandwagon tradition geographically, I also have a Knicks jersey with my name on it. So I guess I have to kind of support the Knicks. But previously, you know, as a kid, I was always a Kobe fan, so it was always Lakers. And then when I moved to San Francisco, the Warriors just started crushing, so I became a Warriors fan. Not so much anymore, so I guess I'm going to go with Knicks.
Okay. I mean, I would put you between a rock and a hard place because you're talking to a diehard Suns fan, and you could easily bandwagon to the Suns. But respect, if you got a jersey with the team's name on it, then, like, You're selling out and supporting the team that you were paid to support. So respect. If you want to hop on the Suns bandwagon for the playoffs, though, since the Knicks are out, I mean, come on down.
Depending on what Troy says, I might have to.
Oh, man. I don't know Troy that well, but maybe he's a Suns fan, too. Maybe we're just converting everybody while they listen to this. But yeah, we met on Clubhouse, I think a little over a week ago, and we were just talking basketball, shooting the shit. And then I think we were talking about basketball, and then we pivoted to like how to get on people's calendars. Do you remember that?
Yes. Yep. That sounds pretty familiar.
Yeah. And I forget exactly how, I think we were all just talking about, like, you know, when someone sends you an email that's like, hey, can I get 15 minutes of your time, or like, right, drop some meeting on your calendar, and you're like, no, just shoot me a DM, or like shoot me what the question is over email, and I'll respond. And it's a lot faster to get my attention than like,
yeah,
being like, hey, can I ask for your time? And I think, what are your thoughts on that?
I really like to be as accessible as possible, just because that's kind of who I am. I really enjoy talking to people. And also just learning about people's experiences and the things that they're doing and all that kind of stuff. But it, you know, Monday to Friday, I have clients, and so I owe most of my time to them. But yeah, I mean, the thing for me is like, if it's a cold outreach, I'm always reading emails and DMs. It's just not as easy to, you know, slot out 15 or 30 minutes on a calendar. It's also nearly impossible to have a real conversation and get to know somebody in less than like 45 minutes, in my opinion, without it being so transactional. And I truly hate transactional relationships because they benefit nobody at the end of the day. You know, even if, for example, you meet somebody, you know, they refer you to somebody else, you do work with them, there's still no real like foundation to a relationship. So, you know, getting on the phone is hard. David Perel, who's a really good friend of mine, has a pretty solid way of handling that, where he says, you know, if somebody wants to jump on the phone, he asks them to send pretty much a full page brief of like exactly what they want, who they are, and like why they want to chat and what they want to chat about. And then if it's something that he finds interesting, then, you know, he'll try to make time. But honestly, it's so tough to just slot out times on the calendar. I feel like there's some days where I barely get enough time of my own to just, you know, do my thing.
Yeah, totally. Also, I'm a huge fan of David Perel. I don't know him personally, but I'm a huge fan of – he's a really proficient writer. Has tons of opinions that he's put out. Definitely go check him out if you haven't already, for those that are listening. I'm of a similar mindset, and I probably don't get hit up maybe as much as like you or David Perel do, but I really hate it, especially for work, when like people just drop like 30 minutes on my calendar without like asking. Or if they send an email that's like, can I get time on your calendar? I think I might adopt more of that mindset of like, send me a brief of what you need or like what the question is, and I can just operate immediately through that. Or I sometimes prefer someone just like sends me a chat message quickly over GChat that's like, hey, quick question, here's my question. Which is a lot faster, and it's a lot, just like you were saying, like it's a lot less transactional than like getting to the point. And I've also been in many meetings, you probably have too, where you're like, at the end of that meeting, you go, that meeting could have been an email, or that meeting could have been two Slack messages.
Yeah, no, totally. And the other thing too is like, there's some meetings where, you know, I feel like I just walk out of the meeting and I'm like, okay, but what did I get out of this meeting? And if the answer is nothing, then I'm just like, well, this was purely transactional for them. I didn't really get anything out of it. Not that I'm completely opposed to those types of meetings, but in most cases, I just don't find them, you know, beneficial.
Yeah. And I think the best meetings are where you're both getting value from either picking the person's brain or coming to a decision or having a conversation, or it's like a bigger meeting where like you're all trying to align on something, whatever it might be, like it has to be a mutually beneficial value add for everyone involved. Otherwise, like totally. It just feels completely transactional.
For sure.
But yeah, come from that conversation, I think I just kind of like talked to you about the podcast. So you're curious about what I do with it. I think you asked like how I record, which for those of you that are listening, I have a very, I guess, stilted opinion when it comes to gear and getting started with things. And my philosophy is actually not my own. I think it's from like Casey Neistat or like probably Casey Neistat. Basically where gear doesn't matter. Whatever you want to say or film or do should just do it with whatever you have in front of you. So this podcast is always recorded with my Mac laptop and my phone. And that's it. There's no microphones. There's no headphones. Maybe I should probably do those now that this is like episode 65 of doing this daily. For the longest time before even starting the podcast, it was basically an excuse to get started. Was like, oh, I don't have a Yeti microphone. Oh, I don't have like headphones. How am I going to invite guests? And then as I got through like the first few episodes, I was like, this totally works. And then you have a couple guests on, put them on Google Meet or a Hangout, whatever, or a Clubhouse like this. And it's just been kind of scrappy of just coming together. But then I DM'd Nick. We talked about the podcast. He was like, yo, I'd be down. When are you recording next on Clubhouse? And I was like, 4 p.m. Tuesday. Let's do it. So that's how we're here. That's how we met.
That's the story.
Yes, sir.
See, so, that was another thing, though. It was like it was a mutual thing from the beginning. It wasn't like you were just like, hey, can I get 45 minutes with no context? It was like we got to have a cool conversation in the beginning. And, we chatted for a good amount of time, too.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's the cool thing about Clubhouse is I've done this many times. You probably have, too, is you just hop into a room and you might be talking to someone that you could just get along with, whether they're like a celebrity or someone who's like super well known, like a big name, or they're just like a new friend that you are just talking about basketball and making fun of them for being Knicks fans, you know, like whatever it might be. But
I don't know, man. Troy might come up here and have some words for you.
In a bit. We'll get to Troy soon. And we can talk about how Devin Booker is better than all of the Knicks in Knick history. But not just yet. Yeah, but just going down our question list to kind of move the pod along, what's your story, man? What's your story to date?
Let's see, the quick and dirty of the story. I was always like the odd kid in high school. And so I would always basically like figure out what are other things that I could do to have fun or whatever. For some reason, for me, that was like doing marketing stuff. And when I was in 11th grade, it ended up with, you know, doing different social media stints with different celebrities. high school, you know, I really didn't, I wasn't like the brightest high school student. And so I ended up going to San Francisco and working at an ad tech company instead of going to college. Spent a couple years there, kind of learned everything on the paid marketing side, artificial intelligence, algorithms, all that fancy stuff. And then joined a company called Hint Water, which is a flavored water brand. Joined there when I was 20 years old, as their director of performance marketing. And then since then, just kind of like, you know, did whatever it took to like grow the brand and build their revenue. And then spent 2 years at Hint, moved to New York, had a brief stint at VaynerMedia. And then since about last year, mid last year, I've been running kind of my own practice called Sharma Brands, where we work with different brands at many different stages and help them on the growth, acquisition, revenue, distribution side of things.
Very cool. So a lot to unpack there, but let's start kind of a few years back. Is when you were working for Kara's, was Kara Swisher running Hint when you were working there?
No, Kara Swisher at the time, maybe still, was running Recode, which sold to Vox. Kara Golden was running Hint, though.
Sorry, I got the last name wrong. My bad. Wow. Yeah, totally. Anyway, when you were graduating from, or when you were moving to New York, coming to you at different, a couple like ad tech companies, what made you want to work at Hint right out of the gate?
Honestly, when I was at the ad tech company, I was consuming a stupid amount of energy drinks from Red Bull, Energy, Monster, Rockstar, and then all of a sudden, Hint Water showed up in our fridge. Somebody ordered it to the office, and I just started chugging those like no other. and then it started. You know, I would tweet out a photo and tag Kara and the Hint brand. And I'd tweet them and be like, hey, when's our next shipment coming? And so I just kind of like became friendly with them through tweets. And then, you know, a few months later, I DM'd Kara and was like, hey, I'm no longer at the ad tech company. I'd love to see if there's anything we can do together. And that's pretty much how it started. But pretty much all my like career opportunities, I guess, have just started through like cold DM or outreach or a cold email.
Very cool. How have you kind of perfected that art over your stint at Hint, then to Vayner, then to doing your own thing? Like, what's the art of a cold email in the words of Nick Sharma?
Oh, there was actually a post I put up on LinkedIn that went viral. But it's really like straight to the point. You basically jump in, you say, hey, Shardul, my name's Nick. I do this and this. You can check me out here, right? Add some social proof. And then you basically say what you're looking for. There's no fluff. And it's something that somebody, whether they say yes or no is up to them, but it's not an email where somebody looks at it and says, oh, fuck, this is so long. I got to read this later. Mm-hmm. Or somebody reads it and is like, oh, okay, now this person wants to talk to me, but they want to first get on the phone to tell me what they want. Or they're emailing me and asking if they can ask a question. So basically just being really straightforward and to the point. The other, I guess not the other day, but like a couple months ago, I was on Twitter and I saw a tweet from Mark Cuban. In a reply was Morning Brew's response saying something like, hey, Mark, would you like to come on the podcast and talk about this issue? And I've cold emailed Mark many times, and he responds within minutes every single time.
No way.
So I feel like I nailed the format with Mark specifically. And so I saw the tweet response from Morning Brew, and I was like, oh, this is going to be legendary because I can easily get him on the podcast, and then this will become a good case study on how to write, you know, cold emails. And so I just, you know, I woke up, I saw the tweet, I was still in bed, I wrote the email. I was like, hey, you know, a friend of mine runs a podcast. They're just hit 1 million downloads. They have a few million email subscribers. You know, they'd love to get you on the podcast. Here are some other names that have been on the podcast. Let me know if you're down. And he responds like, yes. And so right away I loop in, you know, Austin, who's the founder, and Josh, who's kind of the producer of the podcast. And, you know, they made it happen, I think, that afternoon. And then the next day it was up.
That's so cool. Yeah.
It's probably one of my coolest cold email stories for sure.
Not to plug my own podcast, but I'd love to talk to Mark Cuban. I got to see if he wants to buy the Suns. But anyway, yeah, that's a crazy cold email story. How many of the cold emails have you sent where you're just like not getting a response? Like, do you kind of know what your rough ratio is?
Like
how
many? 90% of them. Yeah, no, I mean, well, it also depends, right? Like, earlier in my career, it was more of a numbers game of like, all right, maybe I can get a response.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like now the ratio is probably better, but that's only because I can, you know, I have quote unquote social proof.
Right.
But other than that, I mean, there's still many times where I'll try to email somebody and get absolutely no response, but then you figure out other ways, right? Like if they don't respond to their email, maybe they just didn't see it. Maybe you can, you know, DM them on Instagram or add them on Snapchat and send them a message. Like there's so many ways to get in touch with people. You can even do intros. Like, you know, there's a pretty solid chance if you're trying to get in touch with somebody that you have at least one person in common.
Yeah, totally.
When I was much younger, I would like, I remember doing this cause I hated myself for it, but like I would try to become friends with somebody who knew that person, knowing that like a month in or 2 months in, I could get the intro. And I mean, that's another tactic. It's not as gracious as a human, but it's something that works.
Did you just say you used to use people for their network?
Yeah, potentially. Or I would think like, you know, if I become friends with this person, then maybe they can help me get in contact with these other people.
That's not, it's
a friend
not,
of mine.
Yeah.
A friend of mine had this tactic where he would basically, like, for example, if you're trying to get in touch with Troy, and let's say you saw Troy at, you know, Troy went to an event last Friday night, basically set up like a fake intro saying, hey, Troy, it was great chatting with you. As mentioned last Friday, I wanted to connect you with Nick to see what you guys could, you know, what could come from it. And if Troy was drinking by any chance, he would probably be like, oh, shit, I totally forgot I said that, but yeah, I'm down.
Huh, interesting. I have done that. I feel like everyone at some point has done that where you like, you're talking to someone at like a happy hour or a bar and you're not necessarily interested in like that person directly, but you're interested in who they know and like their contacts. But yeah, that's an interesting thing. I haven't done that in a long time. I feel like it's always used for if I'm in the job market or if I want to get someone to like write an article or they want me to comment on something, whatever it might be. I think it's always used in that sense, but that's interesting. I've never heard of that in a long time, but you don't do that much anymore. Now you've gone the cold email route. Is that fair?
Now it's honestly like cold email or even just like tweeting at somebody or just, you know, figuring out a way for an intro.
Got it. Cool. Yeah. Well, things have changed. I mean, there's no more happy hour. There's no more bars and we're all stuck in quarantine. So what are three things that have helped you during these shelter-in-place quarantine times?
Ooh. I would say one is by far like FaceTime or honestly like apps for communication, whether it's FaceTime or Clubhouse or I wouldn't say Zoom because Zoom is more work-focused, but probably FaceTime. Like I FaceTime with a good amount of friends probably every night. The second thing I would say is my bed, my 8 sleep bed, because it makes sure I go to sleep on time and also sleep comfortably.
Okay.
And the third thing is, let's see, honestly, friends, I guess. Friends, or like melatonin, maybe.
Yeah.
One of the two.
I mean, totally. Yeah, for me, it's very similar. I don't have that same bed, but I think I'm definitely grateful to have like a stable job, a roof over my head, be able to like DoorDash stuff if I need to, or like Uber Eats stuff if I need to. But yeah, those things have just been helping me during quarantine. Going back a little bit to kind of your quick and dirty story, what made you jump from Hint to Vayner? And then the follow-up question will be Vayner to start your own thing.
To be honest, I was really wanting to come out to New York. When I was at Hint, I'd come to New York like once a month anyways for work. And I pretty much always had more friends here in New York than I ever did in San Francisco.
Interesting.
And so, you know, naturally I really wanted to move to New York. I just also felt like there was a bigger community here for the things that I do, whether it's on the investing side or on the marketing side or on the commerce side of things. And I just wanted to kind of be in this community, I guess. But yeah.
Very cool. So how did you get to Vayner? Did you just apply, cold email Gary? What was your process?
I actually cold emailed Gary in 2014, I think. Okay. And it landed an interview, but I couldn't fly out, so because I couldn't afford a flight, so that didn't happen. But no, they reached out. They launched a new division called Vayner Commerce, which was recently announced. But they had reached out mid 2018 about coming to join for basically building up that division.
Very cool. So then you were there for a year, a year and a half?
No, about 4 months.
Oh, super quick. Wow.
Yeah, not too long.
Okay.
I just kind of realized, like, being on the, you know, I was on the brand side for 2 years. I was running a team and doing a lot myself, making a lot of calls, you know, like calling the shots, basically. And then at an agency, it's kind of the opposite, where you're more working. I mean, it is client services. You're basically doing what the client says. And I just really got there and wanted to roll my hands up and get them really dirty again. And so I was just like, you know, there's no point in wasting anybody's time. So I ended up bouncing.
So you bounced and made Sharma Brands, or did you have a stint in between that?
No, so I bounced, and, you know, my main goal was, let me find something that's, like, about to approach Series A that I can join in as, like, a head of growth. And my plan was, I'm going to email every single CEO, CMO, founder, and VC in New York City and sit down with them and, like, try to get, you know, time on their calendar. And basically, like, see, you know, what's out there or what's, you know, what's approaching that kind of stage. And in the meantime, I was consulting on a few different projects, but the consulting just became really fun because, you know, a brand would bring me in and be like, all right, Nick, what should we do? And I got to get my hands really dirty. And so I just kept doing that for a while. The first thing I did was launch a beverage brand called Lemon Perfect, which is now a nationwide beverage brand. The second thing I did was build out the direct-to-consumer infrastructure and launch the ready-to-drink cans for Chacha Matcha. And then after that, it was just a variety of projects, you know, from working with brands like Dude Wipes to Hydrant to the Pill Club to you know, Lalo, House, Super Coffee, like just a bunch of different direct to consumer brands. And then at the beginning of this year, I decided, you know, that was pretty fun, but let me try to get a little more sleep this year. So let me hire a few extra people on the team. And so now we're basically a small SWAT team, I call it, of, you know, designers, developers, video editors, graphic designers, and like actual operator type of marketers. And cool. So we'll basically come into brands and kind of help them get to that next level.
Very cool. So what's next for Sharma Brands and for you specifically, if you could say?
Yeah, we are still going pretty strong on working with other brands. We've been doing a lot of work with our own portfolio companies, which has been really fun and exciting. We're also looking to launch a couple brands by the end of the year, which I'll be announcing soon, which will be exciting. But yeah, really just staying in the brand space and trying to grow from there.
Are you planning on broadening up the people that work for you, or are you kind of more interested in picking up more portfolio companies, or both?
You know, the people thing is interesting. Like, I would have never guessed I would have a 10-person team right now. But it's just like you find good talent and you just want to figure out how to make them fit. So that's kind of what I did. But none of it was like, you know, I'm going to go out and I got to hire for these positions. Everything was very, like, serendipitous, you could say.
Okay.
Yeah. But the portfolio company side, I mean, we're always expanding that, you know, wherever it makes sense, both on our end and on the portfolio company side. We don't necessarily invest in companies, you know, at a certain level or a certain type of companies. It's really just like, do I feel like our team can come in and make a difference from a marketing standpoint? And if I think so, and if they think so, then we figure out a way to, you know, put a check in and make it happen.
Very cool. So, as you guys know, for those of you that just joined the room, this is a recording on Clubhouse, which means it's that time of the podcast where we open it up to anyone who's in the audience. Just raise your hand. I'll pop you up. You can ask all of us a question. You can ask just Nick a question. You can ask just me a question. You can call us out, say whatever you want. The rest of the time is going to be for audience people to come up and ask questions. Just a quick time check. We are going to go for probably the next like 15, 20 minutes, and then I'll stop recording, mute everyone, moving back to the audience, and then close out the podcast. But yeah, if you have a question or you want to talk about something, feel free to raise your hand and I'll pop you up and we'll jump into the three good things for the day. Nick, I'll make you a mod too. That way,
Sweet. I say we...
You broke up there for a second. What'd you say?
I say we invite Troy up.
Yeah, totally. There's Troy.
Hey, I'm here to support Nick, but also mostly support the Knicks. The Knicks are never
love you too.
Yeah, well, welcome to the stage, Troy. I'm sad you're a Knicks fan, but who are you supporting in the NBA bubble?
Booker's cool. I support the Suns. I texted Nick and I was like, I'll allow the Suns support.
Yes. All right.
I'll give you a half court shot. I'm cool with.
Logo book. Book it. Yeah, no, 7-0, undefeated. Can't fault him. Welcome to the bandwagon. Hopefully you get the plan. But yeah, how do you and Nick know each other, Troy?
Oh man,
for years.
Yeah,
it's like it's been years.
Yeah, it's been a minute since like early Hint till craziness.
No, even before that, I think before Hint is.
Oh, what was the panda company you had or something?
Yeah, Viral Panda. That was like right after the ad tech company.
Oh, yeah, no, it's been a minute.
That's the funny thing. I feel like people just don't recognize. Like relationships have been established for so long in some cases.
Oh, yeah. I mean, back then, like, you and I are, like, Nick and I, like, made a Facebook group, like, organizing, like, all these marketers and founders together. And it was pretty cool. We had some events with it. That was, like, what, like 6 years ago, 5 years ago?
Yeah.
Back when
we had, like, some Facebook-sponsored events.
What?
And, yeah, dude, we, like, that was solid. I remember that. Good times.
Good times when Facebook groups were in their prime.
Yeah, I don't know if I even use Facebook groups anymore. Right now, I use it to just
never
like.
Shook you.
What replaced your Facebook group? Just like a group chat?
Yeah, I feel like group chats, like WhatsApp groups, mostly Twitter. I feel like, to be honest.
That's true. Yeah. What about you, Nick? Do you use Twitter or Facebook groups still?
I use Twitter, but not for the purpose of, like, group type of interaction. I would say the most thing I use is, like, honestly, just iMessage groups. Mm. It's the most universal. If you don't have an iPhone, I'm probably not going to talk to you anyways. no green text. We don't deal with that. But honestly, like, yeah, I guess iMessage groups, I would say, are the easiest thing.
Yeah, I just signed up for text.com. I don't know if you guys already have that. Looks really interesting.
I know, but I did see that. Same.
Yeah, I was literally just talking about how, like, Adium and all them, like, the Trillion and all those don't really exist anymore. Then all of a sudden I see text.com pop up, and I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, it seems so. Pretty... Have you guys actually started using it? I haven't yet.
No. I haven't gotten access.
Yeah, I'm just waiting.
Yeah, me neither. But I do like the idea of putting everything together, because right now there's, like, WhatsApp, there's Twitter threads, there's all these different things. Maybe they even have Facebook groups for the ancient people that still use that. But yeah, maybe you could do a consolidate.
I agree. And also just to pile on to what I forgot what I want to mention too, what Nick was saying earlier about getting in touch with people on Twitter. I used to do a tactic, I was going to forget, that I used to just have notifications that people tweet, so I know right away to message to send a reply if I want to try to get in touch with someone. Works super well. You know they're active at the time.
What do you recommend replying? Like if someone is, or if you have any funny stories, that would be great. Like how do you decide what you're going to say back?
Oh man, I mean, it really depends on the person, but it's like people like this is also like Twitter like 8 years ago before like everyone had it on their phone. So like if you didn't get them while they're online at the exact time, you're not going to get a hold of them. Like right now, like I tweeted someone, chances are they have push notifications on, so they'll see it. But back like 8 years ago, like when no one had the push notifications, it was really just getting in front of them at like the exact time they were tweeting.
Got it. Cool. So we'll dive into our three good things for the day. Not sure how related they are to what we were just talking about, but the two quick ones are actually great for indie representation, I think, universally, and just some political update. So Biden has named Kamala Harris from California as the official running mate for vice president. Round of applause for India and...
Shout out Brown Town.
Shout out how lit the Wally is going to be later this year, right around the election, if the election goes to Biden. And then secondly, Stripe has a new CFO. I don't know if you guys saw that, but
what's her name? Emily Weiss's fiance?
I don't think so. But they poached the CFO, Divya Suryadevara. Also huge win for brown
Another
people.
Another big win for the brown people.
Yeah, for Brown Town. From GM, which you don't really see that much, where you go from a car company to something like Stripe, like a big tech company. But yeah. We'll see. I mean, there's been a history of a bunch of companies that hire a huge name CFO and then go public. But we'll see if that actually pans out. Actually, speaking of Stripe... My buddy Josh just joined the audience, and he actually works at Stripe. Josh, we were just talking about the new CFO that's joining Stripe. What up, Josh?
Hey, guys.
Hey. So, pretty good.
Super excited for the new CFO. I'm selfishly excited because she'll be in the New York office, which is where I'll be. But I haven't met her yet, so I don't have any like crazy cool insights to share with you guys or anything.
No worries. Just so you know, this is the recording of my daily podcast. We were just talking about some good news when it comes to I think just general brown representation, like the Kamala Harris ticket, and then the new CFO is also Indian, of Indian descent. So yeah, huge.
I was seeing on Twitter all the tweets that were like, you know, WhatsApp group blowing up, you know, different jokes going around. All the white people are like, what does that mean?
What is the WhatsApp thread? Yeah. Nick, I don't know if you have this, right? If anyone else has this, but I'm in a WhatsApp thing with my cousins, and my aunt just posted some, like, Ayurvedic... like solution to not get coronavirus, and it's like the dumbest. She said scrub your tongue and spin around 3 times while brushing your teeth, and I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. That totally
makes total sense.
Like that.
I'm gonna start doing that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a medical doctor, but if that auntie on WhatsApp says it, then I think we all have to do it. But coming.
That is hilarious.
Coming back to the point, great moves for brown representation. Shout out brown people all over the world getting into some places that they previously were not in. Lots of good news to talk about. Welcome to the pod, Josh. Good to have you
Thanks.
On.
Love it.
So for those of you that don't know, I met Josh through this group called November Project, which is a fitness community here in San Francisco. Josh used to live in San Francisco, and met him at one of the workouts, and then the rest is history. We just kind of stayed friends since, and now he lives in New York City.
That I do.
That you do.
I miss the Bay, miss November Project.
Did you still go to NP in New York?
Yeah, when I'm not quarantining.
Is it like fully virtual or not? Not yet.
Yeah, I mean they don't have any in-person workouts at the moment either.
Oh, gotcha. Cool. Yeah, so those are our two good things for the day: Kamala Harris on the VP ticket and Stripe getting a new CFO. Our third good thing comes from my favorite filmmaker and storyteller, Casey Neistat, finally uploaded a video after like a month hiatus. And for those of you that don't know, I'm a huge Casey Neistat fan. Back when he was vlogging daily, I used to watch his videos every morning with a bowl of cereal, because he used to upload like right at around like 8 a.m. West Coast time, which is like 11 a.m. East Coast time. But he uploaded a really cool video. It's about 10-15 minutes, and it's titled I Don't Know What to Do Anymore, but I think it's more just about family and specifically about him and his son and the whole family dynamic. But what do you guys think about Casey or just the general creator space?
I mean, Troy and I pretty much live in it here. I feel like all of our friends are some way, shape, or form in the creative space. And yeah, I mean, I'm definitely a fan of Casey. I feel like every time he comes out with a big video, it's like, I don't know what to do anymore. This definitely isn't the first one.
Yeah. And I feel like every time he drops a video, maybe it's because I'm like one of those, you could call it super fan, you could call it massive fangirl, whatever you want to call it. I stop what I'm doing, even if it's like a work thing. Like I was on a work call, and I was watching the video on the side when he dropped it earlier today. Like one of the few people that I have like my notifications on for, and it could be about anything. It wasn't even about like his companies or like what he's doing. It's just like, he's a great storyteller. Yeah. Have you guys met Casey being in New York City or like seeing him ride down the streets?
Yeah, I've met him a couple times. Actually met him in San Francisco at HustleCon. And then I want to say once like out here, either at 368 or somewhere around there.
How'd you meet him?
He's a cool guy. Well, at HustleCon, he was backstage. Kara, who's the Hint CEO, was speaking, so I was backstage. And I just went over, and I was like, yo, Casey, I'm the guy who always ships you Hint water. And he's like, oh, shit, what's up? And then I think the other one was just, like, at somewhere at 368 for some event.
Got it. Cool. Yeah, I met him randomly. I was visiting a friend in New York City, and I forget if, I was visiting a friend who was living in Long Island, and at the time, we were going to the city because she was showing me around because I hadn't been in New York in a long time, and then I'm on Instagram, and I see his Instagram story that he's doing a pop-up store for his wife's clothing line, Billy, at 368, and I was like, sorry, I'm not going to catch the like movie that we're going to. I like told my friend, I was like, I'm not going to come to the movie. I got to go check out this pop-up store. And I showed her what it was. And she was just like, this makes no sense. But like, I'm not going to leave you by yourself on the streets of New York. So we both go over to 368. There's already like a solid 50-person line outside just to get in and like look at the merchandise. And most of them are there just to meet Casey. And I go up, this is still in like when I was kind of on the fence of vlogging or not. And I'm like standing in line. I'm trying to explain to my friend like who Casey Neistat is. And she just like doesn't get it. I'm like, he's a filmmaker. He's a YouTuber. She's like, we're going to watch a movie. Like what happened to the movie? Like I want to go watch the movie. And I like couldn't explain. I was just like, you see the line? Like, da-da-da-da-da. Anyway, so I meet him. I ask him like 2-3 questions. I was just like, hey, huge fan. I'm filming a vlog for myself, like haven't been to New York before. What are some things I should check out? And then he like grabs my camera and he's like, subscribe to this guy's YouTube channel. Make sure to click that like button, like the joke stuff that most YouTubers do. So he did that and I still have footage of it. But yeah, that was total.
That's awesome.
5-second meeting. And then I met Dan Mace. For those of you that don't know, Dan Mace used to be the guy that collabed with Casey in New York briefly as well. Similar type of thing.
I feel like Sam Shepard doesn't get a lot of love for collabing with Casey.
Yeah, I didn't see Sam, but I'm a huge fan of Sam as well. I feel like Sam's maybe doing a lot more stuff with 368 now than he was before.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. Cool, man. This is a part of the podcast where I give it over to the guest to give any shout-outs, anything that you want to draw attention to for the listeners or have them check out. So if you have any things that you want to call attention to, anything you want to shout out, go ahead. Otherwise, I'll close out the pod.
I would shout out Troy's Twitter handle, @yo, just for being such a gangster Twitter handle, and also for a great dad joke every day to start the day.
Do you really have @yo, Troy?
Yeah.
What a guy. No way. Damn.
Dad joke a day? Yeah, I feel like, Troy, you're pretty consistent with, like, the dad jokes.
That's it. That's an automatic follow right there.
Oh, thank you. Way too many of them, but...
All right, I gotta ask now, Troy, what's your favorite dad joke?
Oh, now you're just putting me on the spot.
I mean,
also shout out to Troy's brother, who's probably one of the funniest people I've ever met in my life.
Nick's gotta remind me every time I talk to how much funnier my brother is than him.
But he's not wrong. All right, I saw one today. It was very dumb. It's like a straight up like children's joke, but I still laugh when I saw it. What does 50 Cent do when he's hungry? That's 58. I'll throw it out there.
Oh, wow.
It's only funny because I've been drinking House.
Yeah, otherwise, it would not be funny. The rest of the jokes. You know what? You know what my dad told me. I feel like this is like a dumb dad joke. It's kind of long too, but whatever. Do you guys know that The Rock bought like a penthouse apartment in New York City?
No, I do now.
Yeah. So apparently, if you live in that building and you live on like the second or third floor, all those people don't know much because they live under a rock. All right, well, that's a great way to end the podcast. Thank you so much, Nick, for coming on the pod. That's it for today's three good things. If you want to follow Nick on Twitter, he's a great person to follow. Nick, you want to shout out your Twitter handle?
Yeah, @MRSHARMA, Mr. Sharma.
Mr. Sharma on Twitter. If you want to follow me on Twitter, feel free to follow me or on any platform. My handle is ShardulGo, ShardulGo. Thank you, Troy. Thank you, Josh, for coming up to stage for the pod. That's it for another edition of Three Good Things. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I'll see you tomorrow.